Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Lure of White Oak Lake by Robin Alexander, narrated by Laurie Prince. Chapter 1. Morgan Chesson thumped the screen of her GPS, certain that it was playing a joke, or it lost its electronic mind. She was supposed to be looking at a town. Instead, sugarcane and cornfields spread out for miles before her. Through the bug-encrusted windshield of her Jeep, she spotted a truck in the distance. Next to it sat a white sign with the word shrimp spray-painted in red. She'd only passed a few cars during the last 10 miles and wondered why anyone would pick such a desolate backwoods highway to peddle seafood. As Morgan pulled off the road, she noticed an old man sitting on a lawn chair in shade provided by a ratty tarp. He gave her a smile and a nod as she climbed out of her Jeep. "I'm lost. By any chance, have you heard of a town named White Oak Lake? It's not on the map, and my GPS swears I'm there."
"Yeah,"
he said with a nod.
Morgan's heart sank as she looked at the sugarcane blowing in the breeze. She knew it was a small town, but had assumed that there was an actual lake, perhaps people and a building or two.
"This is it?"
"We used to have a sign, but the last hurricane tore it down."
The old man stood and hoisted his sagging pants over slim hips.
"Chet au coin, at your service,"
he said with another crooked smile that enhanced the jagged scar on his cheek and put out his hand.
"You got people in White Oak?"
"I inherited property there recently," Morgan said as she shook his hand. "My dad, Robert Chesson, owned it." Chet scratched at his cheek.
"Don't know him."
"He used to come here often, but not so much in the last few years."
"Where you from?"
"Atlanta." Morgan looked around again, almost wishing she could go back. "My dad was from Baton Rouge."
"Baton Rouge, Bob, a tall fella walk with a limp."
Chet squinted against the sun.
"Was that your daddy?"
Morgan smiled weakly and nodded.
"Yes, I do remember him now. I had coffee with him every now and then at the bait store. He used to tell a whole lot of jokes. You say he's passed on?"
"Yes, sir, almost 4 months ago."
"I'm real sorry. He was a nice fella."
Chet pointed down the road.
"Now look, if you go another 1/2 mile, you'll see a turnoff on the right. You take that and go about 5 miles. It'll put you right on Main Street. Go to the end and hang another right. That road will run you right out around the lake. You know how to go once you get there?"
"I have a hand-drawn map. I should be able to find it then."
"Here."
Chet walked over to the truck, opened a cooler, and pulled out a bag of shrimp.
"You go on and take these. Kind of a welcome present."
Morgan's face colored. "That's really very kind of you, but I'm allergic to seafood."
"Well, I never seen it. A coon-ass that can't eat shrimp. Chesson, that's a Cajun name, but you ain't got much of an accent. City living will do that to you."
Chet dropped the bag back into the cooler, then picked up a basket of tomatoes.
"These here are my late-year girls. Won't find them in any grocery store. No tomatoes you find in a store will taste like these neither."
He held the basket out to Morgan.
"Go on and take them, it's a gift."
"Well, thank you, Chet, for this and the directions," Morgan said with a smile. "I hope I can find a way to repay the kindness." Chet waved a gnarled hand.
"You come down to the bait store some mornings and have coffee with me."
"I'll do that," Morgan said with a wave and climbed back into her Jeep. She found the turn Chet mentioned and began to feel like a mouse in a maze with the walls of corn and cane growing on either side of the road. She was reminded of what Celeste Carmichael, her best friend, had told her the day they packed up her things.
"You aren't gonna be happy in the sticks."
Morgan was inclined to disagree as she looked up to enjoy an unobstructed view of blue sky. October wasn't particularly cool in Louisiana, but on this day, the mild weather had mercy on a wandering soul cruising in an open Jeep. As if some demon focused on her inner thoughts had realized that she was enjoying a moment of peace, it began to remind her of hard days in her recent past.
She could hear Risa's voice clearly in her mind, as if her ex was sitting right beside her. This isn't working out. I'm not happy. Sorry. And then her former employer.
I'm sorry, Morgan. Business isn't picking up. I'm going to have to let you go.
And then the many voices of those offering their condolences began in a mournful chorus.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
If there were two things Morgan was truly sick of, they were the words sorry and change she didn't cause. There had been too much of both lately. She'd taken some semblance of control by packing her things and retreating to the cabin her father had oddly chosen to leave to her, instead of her brother Brad. Though she was thankful to have the cabin, her father's choice made no sense. Brad had spent many a weekend there with their father. It had been Brad and his wife, Tanya, who took Robert into their home when he could no longer live on his own. In Morgan's opinion, Brad was more deserving. It meant more to him, and he'd been their father's caregiver to the end. The fields on either side of the road gave way to cypress trees growing out of marshy terrain that changed just as quickly to a wooden landscape with dense brush. Long fingers of sunlight wove their way through thick foliage and made Morgan blink from the strobe light effect on her eyes. And then the town came into view. There were no tall buildings, no traffic lights, buses, or cabs. Morgan brought the Jeep to a smooth halt at a stop sign, where she rested her arms on the steering wheel. There was no one behind her to honk and complain that she was taking too long. Buildings lined one side of the street. A hardware store, bakery, cafe, and an office building stood in a neat little row facing the lake on the other side of the road. In the distance along the water, Morgan could see a few houses, a church, and a long pier protruding from a large wooden store into the lake with boats gathered around it.
Oh my God, I've landed in Mayberry, she said as she began to move slowly.
People on the sidewalk gave her curious glances, then a wave. Children played in a park on the banks of the lake. Someone was taking advantage of a beautiful Saturday afternoon, grilling beneath a pavilion while others fished. Morgan chuckled as she waved at two men playing chess at a picnic table. White Oak Lake was lovely, wholesome, serene, and scary as shit to a lesbian from the city. She put the scrap of paper with her map drawn on it in front of the odometer and referred to it as she turned on Lakeshore Drive. Most of the houses were old, some Victorian style. All had large porches where people waved while they sat in rockers and on porch swings. Morgan waved back as she took in the surroundings. The Lure, a bait shop and general store with a big hook on the top, was a landmark on the map. The parking lot surrounding the store, which sat over the water on pilings, was filled with boat trailers connected to pickups. Boats fanned out behind it on the lake in the late afternoon sun. Morgan began to count the driveways when she passed it and turned right at the fourth one. Gravel crunched under her tires as she navigated down the shaded path. What she beheld when she turned off the engine wasn't anything like the stately homes she'd passed on the way. She quit smoking many years ago, but as she gazed at the cabin overgrown with vines, she wanted to get a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of bourbon and consume both until the heebie-jeebies went away.
The inside will look better, Morgan said aloud,
needing to hear the audible assurance.
It's paid for, and it has great potential.
She repeated what Brad had said, but when he'd uttered those words, they sounded comforting.
Rolling off her own tongue, they didn't have the same effect.
Brush had grown mostly over the front porch. Spiders and large cobwebs almost deterred Morgan from trying one of the steps. The seat of a weather-worn chair near the door gave way and landed with a thud. Along with the spiders, it too seemed to say, "Go back to where you came from and do it quickly." But tempted as Morgan was to heed the warning, she was reminded there was nowhere else to go, unless she wanted to stay with Brad. Her father had died in his house, and Morgan had not been back there since that night. The key slid into the lock roughly, and it took some effort to get it to turn. Slowly, Morgan pushed open the door and peered inside. The place smelled musty and felt damp as she stepped in. The hardwood floors were scuffed and in need of refinishing, but were surprisingly sturdy, as Morgan dared to go deeper into the small living room. In the muted light, she squinted at a plaid-covered couch resting against one wall and a matching chair in the corner next to a table with a lamp. Both faced a small brick fireplace. She crossed the room and opened the drapes, needing more light. They came down in her hands, and she gasped at the view. The large window overlooked a deck. Beyond it, a small yard covered in brush and pine straw. Then the lake in all its dazzling glory. The sun's reflection danced on the surface, making it shimmer like diamonds. Okay, Morgan said with a nod. I found positive. She jumped as the cell phone in her back pocket rang.
Are you there yet?
Brad asked excitedly. Yes, and I just about turned away when I pulled in the drive.
It's kind of overgrown. I didn't have a chance to get it cleaned up. Have you found the breaker box yet?
No, lead me to it. I'm in the living room and maybe the kitchen, I think. Morgan squinted at the adjoining room. It's daylight. Why is it so dark in here?
All the windows are closed and the place is completely shaded. Your electricity bill isn't going to amount to anything because you won't have to run the AC units as much in the summer. That little fireplace will near about warm the entire cabin in the winter. But there are space heaters in the hall closet. Go down the hall to the first door on the left.
Morgan followed Brad's instructions to the door and opened it. I can barely make out anything, it's so dark. I'm gonna have to use my phone for light.
It's the top breaker. Just throw it. I'll wait.
Morgan threw the breaker and heard the refrigerator compressor kick on. She switched on the hall light, then the one in the bathroom as she put the phone back to her ear.
I can shower and pee at the same time. Yeah, the bathroom is kind of small. There are towels, washcloths, and a couple rolls of toilet paper in the closet with the breaker box. Now look in the bedroom.
Morgan could tell Brad was smiling as she moved down the short hall. She stepped into the room and flipped the light switch. Oh, Brad, did you do this?
I had help,
he said proudly.
Tanya picked out the bedding and the rug because she knows you like blue. I made the bedside table and the dresser. What do you think your baby brother's craftsmanship?
Morgan ran her hand over the smooth finish of the light wood, the color in contrast to the dark blue of the comforter on the bed. You are a master, she said as she opened one of the drawers.
I wanted you to be comfortable. We were in such a hurry that we didn't have time to do anything with the living room. The place is clean, though. All the appliances in the kitchen work. Tanya put a few canned goods in the pantry for you.
I can't thank you both enough. She bit back a sigh and asked, when will I see you again?
Soon, I promise. We'll come up for a weekend. You okay?
I'm good, thanks to you and Tanya. Give her my love.
Oh, hey, there's a TV in the bedroom closet. I didn't want to leave it out in case any kids were snooping around the place. The cable's hooked up and ready to go. I hooked up a router so you can go wireless, but you'll need to recycle the modem. And you may want to let the water run for a while because it kind of stinks. You're on a well. Dad always said it was safe to drink, but I'd stick to the bottled stuff if I were you.
I'll definitely do that.
Okay, sis, I'm gonna let you go and get settled in. I love you.
Love you too. Morgan tucked her phone in the back pocket of her shorts and looked around. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. You'll get back on your feet and life will begin again. Her words echoed in the emptiness of the cabin, and she wished that she could believe them. Morgan unloaded the Jeep, took a shower, and ate a tomato for dinner because she was too lazy to go in search of food. She lay in bed, listening to the TV playing in the living room. Hearing other voices made her feel less alone. She was tired from the trip and felt if she switched off the lamp next to the bed, she might fall asleep. It was foolish to be afraid of the dark at 36, but she'd never grown out of the phobia, though her father had tried to help her with it.
Lights out, baby. It's time to go to sleep.
Morgan pulled the covers up to her neck. Can I keep my closet light on?
You have a nightlight and you're 6 big ol' years old,
her father said, pointing at it.
Isn't that enough?
Morgan shook her head. He sat on the side of her bed.
What are you afraid of?
Monsters. I saw them on TV. One had a wolf face.
Where do these monsters live?
In the dark. Outside behind the trees, Morgan whispered. He held his arms out.
Come with me, baby. Let me show you what's really outside.
There was no place safer than in her daddy's arms. As long as he held her, Morgan believed nothing could harm her. She rode on his hip with her arms around his neck as he opened the back door and hugged him tighter when he stepped into the grass.
Where are we going?
To see what's in the shadows. What do you hear?
Morgan listened intently for a moment.
Crickets. And a bird.
That's all that's out here, baby.
He walked amongst the trees with Morgan tight in his arms.
It's very peaceful out here, don't you think?
Do you have a silver bullet? Morgan asked seriously. That's what you have to kill the wolf people.
I don't need a silver bullet. Are you kidding me?
He asked as he tickled her ribs.
I'd take that wolf man by the arm and bang him on a tree if he were real. But he's not, honey. I promise.
Morgan held on to his neck, looking behind them just to be sure that nothing followed.
Daddy's not going to let anything happen to you or Brad,
he said as he sat with her on the porch swing.
I'll always protect you, and you know what?
Morgan yawned, and they rocked back and forth.
What?
One day when you're bigger, you're gonna have a little girl or a boy that you'll protect, and you'll live in a house like this one, and you'll have a husband that'll watch over you.
Morgan reached up and switched off the lamp, thinking her dad had been wrong about a lot of things. Chapter 2. Jacqueline Wyatt felt as though someone had strapped a load of bricks onto her back as she trudged home. She climbed the slight rise to her house above the lake, and it seemed as though she was trying to conquer Mount Everest. Working 7 days a week was beginning to take a toll on her 39-year-old body. After being on her feet for 12 hours, all she wanted was to drop into her porch swing. And if the mosquitoes weren't bad, she'd seriously consider sleeping there. Wooden steps creaked beneath her feet as she used the last of her energy to propel herself to the swing. She'd almost reached her goal when the screen door flew open.
Hey, Mom, I made you a glass of tea.
Jacqueline released a grateful sigh as Austin set the cool glass into her hands.
You're the best son a woman could have, she said as she sat.
I think the roast is ready. Want me to make you a plate?
Not yet, but thanks.
I'm gonna go get a plate,
Austin said as he turned to go back inside.
I'm starving.
Jacqueline sipped her tea and surveyed her freshly mown yard in the waning light of day. Her eyes narrowed.
Austin?
Yes, ma'am,
he said behind the screen door.
Where's the plum tree I just planted?
Well, the buds to my iPod, my hands were sweaty, a bee. I'm sorry.
The last time the sun was in his eyes, the time before that, he'd simply claimed he hadn't seen it. Jacqueline sighed, thinking she never had to ask her son to mow the grass. Maybe having a plum tree in her yard wasn't that important. 3 had already been murdered. She tore her gaze from the mulch that had been around the tree and was now scattered over the yard. She knew every inch of the lake where she'd grown up. In the evenings, she loved to watch the lights come on in the houses along its banks. On this particular evening, she noticed light where normally there was none. The house that sat on a small protrusion was lit up like Las Vegas. Someone new had come to White Oak Lake. If a local had bought the place, Jacqueline would have heard about it. She was kind of surprised that her sister hadn't called her with news about the newbie. Usually, fresh blood was a hot topic.
Austin?
Yes, ma'am? Do you know who's staying in the old cabin?
The screen door creaked on its hinges. Austin was gnawing on a chunk of roast he held in his hand.
It's lit up. I know, that's why I asked.
I think I was 9 the last time I saw somebody in that house. Me and Logan used to dig for arrowheads in the backyard. Logan found a good one.
Jacqueline looked at the gravy dripping off of Austin's hand. Please tell me you are not eating directly out of the crock pot.
I was hungry, Mama.
Go into the kitchen, get a plate out of the cabinet, and put the food on it. Then wipe up the mess I'm certain you've made.
Jacqueline fanned a hand in front of her face.
After you eat, go upstairs and take a shower. Use soap. Lots of it.
I'm 14, Mama, not 5.
Austin sniffed at his armpit.
I don't smell that bad.
Trust me when I say you do.
Austin shrugged and opened the door.
Do you have to work tomorrow?
No, Chet's going to take my place.
Good.
Austin stepped inside and Jacqueline was certain she heard.
Because you're grumpy.
She was, and exhausted. Bailey, her new hire, was almost ready to be on her own. She'd take a lot of the pressure off of Jacqueline's shoulders on the weekends. Chet did, too, but he only worked when he wanted to, and Jacqueline was never really sure when that would be. A widower, Chet Aucoin would call the day before and say he was available, but getting him to commit to any kind of schedule was impossible. Jacqueline pulled her phone from the pocket of her shorts and pressed the number 1 on her speed dial. Maddie, her younger sister, answered on the second ring.
I was going to call you. Mom and Dad are in Utah. I just hung up with them. Dad's complaining that Mom's rock collection is costing them extra money in gas, and Mom is complaining that everything Dad eats is giving him gas.
Any word on when they'll be home?
Thanksgiving. Sooner if the weather up there turns really cold. I don't know if I could roam the country with Heath. I'd probably kill him after the first 100 miles. I think Mom wants to do the same with Dad. What's up?
Jacqueline looked out over the water at the little house in question. All the floodlights were on, and she could see light in all the windows.
Do you know who moved into the cabin down the road from me?
She pulled the phone away from her ear when she heard a loud clatter and figured Maddie was opening her blinds.
Oh, wow! I haven't seen life in that place for ages! Carolyn said some guy came in 3 weeks ago and had the power turned on there, but he left right after that.
That's all you have?
Jacqueline asked in surprise.
Normally, your information's central.
Well, I've been a little preoccupied, Maddie said loudly,
probably for Heath's benefit.
Someone cut down a tree and sent it through my living room.
How's the restoration coming along?
Slowly, Maddie said just as loudly.
The roof's been repaired, and apparently someone thinks that's all that needs to be done. But I have news for him. If he doesn't want to eat peanut butter for the rest of his life, he'd better get started on the ceiling.
Poor Heath, Jacqueline said with a chuckle.
Poor nothing. Don't you feel sorry for him? He knew better than to cut that tree himself, and he wouldn't have had I been home. Yes, I'm talking about you, Mr. Man. Do you know how long it took me to clean up the mess you made in here?
Maddie's voice rose an octave.
I want to sit on my own couch. Is that too much to ask?
She cleared her throat and said calmly, I have to go now. If you see an ambulance pull up in front of my house, pay it no mind, and I'll get the scoop on the newcomer.
Love you. Bye.
The second she put the phone down, Jacqueline heard a crash in her kitchen, then a muffled,
Oh, that's not good.
She rolled her eyes as Austin called out,
Mom, where's the broom? You may not want to come in here.
Jacqueline laid her head against the back of the swing and looked at the giant pair of sneakers lying next to the back door. It didn't seem that long ago when she could hold both of his shoes in the palm of her hand. Where had the time gone? Jacqueline wondered as memories of birthday parties and building Lego towers flashed through her mind. Time would speed on, and Austin would be going off to college in a few years. She had no idea what she'd do with herself then. Jacqueline couldn't see leaving White Oak Lake, the town where she'd grown up and made a life with the help of her grandmother. She'd followed in Augusta Wyatt's footsteps with the house and the store, and like Augie, Jacqueline was afraid that she was headed for a life of solitude and loneliness. Augie had never remarried, though she was a young woman when her husband died. Everyone in town thought she was too determined and independent to have a man in her life. Augie had been fond of that reputation, but had confessed to Jacqueline alone that it was all a facade. Love had never come knocking at her door again, and she was too afraid to go out and find it. Jacqueline had done some searching and thought she'd found someone special at least once, but things never panned out. It seemed that White Oak Lake was shallow when it came to available suitors, and Jacqueline had grown tired of casting out her heart, only to have it come back to her.
Mama, where's the Windex?
Jacqueline winced.
What do you need that for? I was gonna use it to clean the gravy off the ceiling.
Chapter 3. By 9 the next morning, Morgan had already sweated through the t-shirt she was wearing, and she'd made hardly a dent in the front yard. She'd picked up sticks and large branches. The pile she'd made was impressive, but still, the sliver of land looked untouched. Needing to vent her frustration, she took an axe she'd found in the storage shed out back to a fallen tree that lay sprawled across the front lawn. The wood wasn't as soft as she'd hoped it to be. She paused and wiped her brow as something moved in her periphery. A teenage boy on a bike passed by on the road, watching her as he went. He slammed on the foot brake, making the back tire slide sideways on the asphalt when she caught his eye.
Hey,
he called out as he headed toward her.
Hey,
Morgan said with a wave and prepared to go back to work on the tree. The boy dropped the bike in her driveway and walked over to where she stood.
You bought this place?
I own it, yes. He appeared to be about 17, Morgan thought as she looked him over, and figured he was nearing 6 feet. He tossed his head to the side, sending blonde bangs from his blue eyes, and stuffed his hands into the pockets of his long shorts.
You like Van Halen? She asked, nodding at his t-shirt. I saw them play in Baton Rouge when I was around your age.
The boy squawked out the first line to Panama as he strummed the front of his shirt like a guitar.
That must have been a long time ago.
Morgan tried not to feel insulted as she nodded.
Yeah, it was. I'm Austin Wyatt. My mom owns the Lure. Did you see it?
Morgan Chasson, and yes, I noticed it on my way in. Austin took his hands from his pockets and set them on his hips.
Is that axe all you got? You're gonna need a chainsaw for this.
It's good exercise, and I figured I'll have this tree cut up by winter.
Next winter, maybe. Mr. Harlan has a saw. Be right back.
Morgan called after the flash that took off toward the road, but he didn't listen. She wasn't hip on borrowing anything from a stranger, and she wasn't going to allow a teenager to use a power saw in her yard. Whoever Harlan was, she hoped that he wasn't home. She wiped her brow again and went back to chopping on the tree. A while later, a man showed up with Austin carrying a chainsaw.
Got yourself a big mess here. I'm Harlan Schaefer, he said, offering Morgan his hand.
Morgan took it.
I'm Morgan Chasson. I know. Austin here told me. Is your dad Bob? You look like him.
Was, Morgan said as she looked away. He died a few months ago. Harlan was quiet for a moment.
Well, that's a damn shame,
he said lowly.
I tried to keep this place up for a while, but after the last hurricane, there was too much to do.
He pulled a pair of gloves from his back pocket.
I'd be willing to bet that by the end of the day, we'll have it looking good.
Mr. Schaefer, I'm on a limited budget, and Harlan held up a gloved hand.
This is what neighbors do for one another around here.
He turned his attention to Austin.
Go see if Clark's up and tell him to bring the tractor.
Austin tore off again before Morgan could say anything. Harlan cranked the saw he'd brought with him, startling her. He cut through a portion of the tree before she knew what was happening. He was a slight man, thin and not much taller than Morgan's 5 feet 9 inches. Red and silver hair poked out from beneath a green John Deere cap he wore high on his head. He looked up at Morgan and yelled over the sound of the saw,
"My wife will be over shortly. She's putting her face on."
In less than an hour, Morgan's...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?